This contract extension for Hubert Davis that was signed before the season began, why keep it a secret for so long?
Yeah, that is a mystery, especially for a public university. For those who don't know, private universities usually don't have to share many of these details at all, if any, in the athletics context. But public universities do. Sometimes there are contract details that have to be ironed out by the lawyers, and that explains perhaps the delay between what we're told was a verbal agreement all the way back last summer on Hubert Davis's new contract and the actual signing of that deal in the month of December. So that's defensible, I think. But what about the 2+ month delay between the actual signing and the posting of those details on Carolina's website? UNC is going to have to answer for that. But the bottom line is Hubert Davis extended through 2030, and that decision was made prior to this topsy-turvy season that we're following right now.
I don't know if you've looked at the contract at all, the extension, but if you did, is there anything about the contract that jumps out to you?
I think most people are sometimes surprised to learn that if a coach makes $3 million plus, I'll use the air quotes around the word, only $1 million or so actually comes directly from the athletic department coffers. That supplementary compensation comes from the Rams Club, Booster Club, and their sources. And that is, by today's standards, Chris, a relatively low salary, $3 million, when you add it all up, $3 million and change. So Hubert Davis, of course, as a younger coach, as a guy only in his fourth season, is not going to make, you know, what Rick Pitino makes at St. John's or what Roy Williams or Mike Krzyzewski were making at the end of their tenures. The jury is still out on whether Hubert Davis is the right fit. He might be missing the NCAA tournament for the second time in 4 years. That's to be determined. But I don't think there was anything shocking or out of the ordinary when I saw those details.
The need for a general manager with UNC basketball. We've seen similar roles at Duke, at St. Bonaventure, of course, in other sports, even at UNC with Bill Belichick and the football program there. For our listeners who are maybe trying to wrap their head around this new era of college athletics, why a need for a general manager and what is the role?
Yeah, the first thing to remember for those who are familiar with that term, general manager, you cannot think of it the way we do an NFL general manager or an NBA general manager. You know, in the professional ranks, if you're the GM, you're actually in charge of making draft picks. You select the college basketball player or college football that you think is the best fit for your NFL or NBA team. And the coach is advising you in that context, but the GM makes those decisions. In college, it's still going to be the coach who is out there recruiting and scouting, deciding which high school players, which transfer portal players are the best fits for their program. So it's going to mislead a lot of people because we're using the same two words to describe a very different job description. But it has to do, and Hubert Davis's comments about Jim Tanner, a UNC grad who was hired for this role, included helping the Tar Heels navigate contracts, navigate the transfer portal, and otherwise advance the program. And that's because, Chris, as you and I have discussed in the past, there has been more change in college athletics in the last 5 years than there were in the previous probably 30 or 40 years combined. And that has to do with name, image, likeness is relatively new. Immediate eligibility for transfers is relatively new. The creation of the transfer portal is relatively new. All these things happened in the last half a dozen years. Hubert Davis says, and others do, I want to get back to coaching and recruiting and not have as many of these outside distractions. College players have agents now, and the coaches' phones are ringing for a long list of reasons way beyond what was traditionally the case, and the hiring of a general manager allows for many of those things to be taken off the coach's plate so that he can get back to the old school aspects of his job.
You think Jim Tanner's a good fit at Chapel Hill for this role?
Yeah, interestingly, we graduated at the same time from the University of North Carolina, did not know each other personally at that time, went to different law schools, but he's an incredibly respected guy, Chris. He had as clients more than a dozen NBA players just from UNC over the years, And he also had clients such as Wake Forest superstar Tim Duncan, Duke superstar Grant Hill, along with other Hall of Fame type guys. So, you know, if those who make those life decisions entrust their financial futures with Jim Tanner, that's a heck of an endorsement. And I think it's good, too, that Carolina, which we all know tends to try to stay in the family, quote unquote, rather, they didn't technically stay in the basketball family. In other words, Buzz Peterson, former Tar Heel player, was a candidate for this job and didn't get it, although it looks like he might be hired in a different capacity. They stayed within the family, meaning a UNC graduate, but it is a new set of eyes. It's someone who's been in the business world, the marketing world, and things like player branding and even a salary cap, Chris. I mean, starting this summer, there might be a salary cap in college athletics. We've never had that. It depends on, you know, whether the judge approves that House NCAA legal settlement. If so, there's a $20+ million pot of money that is going to be spread among not only UNC athletes in that case, but all these bigger schools are going to have that that same ability to spend. But that's across men's and women's sports. People have to decide, you know, how much goes to football, how much to men's basketball, how much elsewhere. Again, these are things a head basketball coach does not want to be the primary decision maker on. So Jim Tanner has all sorts of experience with all of those things. And that's what one of the reasons I think he's a great fit for the job.
All right, as I let you go, on the court, the ACC's a mess. Duke's really good. Carolina may not make the NCAA tournament. State may not make the ACC tournament. Make sense of all this for us, DJ.
I can't. but I'll tell you this. In the modern history of the ACC, the baseline for how let's call it their participation rate in the NCAA tournament, their baseline has been one-third. In other words, when you were a boy and the ACC had only nine schools, their baseline, they never got fewer than three of the nine. Mm-hmm. They often got more. They often got more than half into the tournament. When they were a 12-school league, their baseline was four. They never dropped below that. When there were 15 teams in recent years, they got five in, exactly one-third. Well, guess what? They're an 18-team league right now, and they're sure as heck not going to get six teams in. So just numerically, put opinion aside, numerically, this is going to be the most disappointing participation rate in the big dance in modern ACC history. I obviously, Duke, Louisville, and Clemson are in. I still think Wake and Carolina have a chance, but they better either beat Duke here at the end of the regular season or do some damage at the ACC tournament in Charlotte. If they don't, I think the Tar Heels and the Demon Deacons are going to be left out. And maybe Pitt and SMU, the other ACC bubble teams as well.
Man, a lot to break down in the final 2 weeks of the regular season. David Glenn of the North Carolina Sports Network. Find his work at ncsportsnetwork.com. DG, always appreciate the time, and we'll talk again real soon.
Thank you, my friend.